Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of the show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. I'd like to look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. And this week, we'll continue what we were discussing last week, which is an article by Charles Duhigg regarding what does your credit card company know about you. In short, what this article is discussing is the psychological training that goes into the debt collection process and the entire credit card industry. There's been a switch recently from the aggressive harassment approach for some of the companies into a psychological approach to cooperate with the debtor, or at least appear to cooperate with the debtor by using psychological techniques to get the debtor to, in a sense, figure out the problem together and get the flow of money back into the credit card company. Continuing with the article, the writer says, "Just days earlier, I spoke to Donna Tiff, a 49-year-old Missouri woman. We were introduced through the Center for Responsible Lending, an advocacy organization that Tiff contacted after companies began hounding her about the $40,000 she owed on multiple cards. The phone would not stop ringing," she said. "I would get on, crying, and tell them I don't believe in suicide, but I'm close, that I'm going to file for bankruptcy, and then you'll get nothing." And then a woman named Tracy came along. She worked for a company that today is a subsidiary of Bank of America. Tracy had talked to Tiff several times and noticed that there was a mistake on her account. An automatic payment was going to be deducted twice from her checking account. If that happened, Tiff's other checks would bounce. "I told her, 'Thank you so much for catching that,' Ms. Tiff said. And then we talked for over an hour about my problems and raising kids. She was amazing. She was so similar to me. She gave me her direct number and said that I should call her directly anytime I had any questions or just needed to talk about what was going on." Over the next 3 years, Tiff paid off the entire $28,000 she owed Bank of America and spoke regularly with Tracy, she said. "And the $12,000 she owed the other cards? Well, those companies didn't have a Tracy. They never got fully repaid." It's a heartwarming story, unless you've seen how people like Tracy are schooled in the art of bonding. What are the odds that the random customer assistant who dealt with Tiff would have so much in common with her and manage to strike such a close bond? The writer of the article tried to call Tracy using the information Tiff provided, but he was told that she didn't work there anymore. And it's interesting to note that one Bank of America executive acknowledged that Tiff and the caller on the recording in the training course probably could have cut her debt in half just by asking. Much of what they're paying, after all, is fees and interest that Bank of America itself tacked on. And this is an important point. "Some cardholders are not as savvy as others," said Tony Allen, a company spokesman, who added that the company tries to educate cardholders about their options. He said, "I'm sure some people feel like we have conflicted interests and that we'll only educate as much as it helps us get paid. But we take our responsibility seriously." So looking at the other side, Tiff was asked if she ever asked Tracy to write off the late fees and the interest charges. "Oh no," said Tiff. "She was so kind to me. How could I ask her for something like that? If you ask credit card executives about the current financial crisis, they'll admit things aren't going good right now. But what really has them worried is what's going on in Washington. Just last month, President Obama invited 14 credit card executives to the Roosevelt Room and told them he planned to ask Congress to outlaw any time, any reason rate boosts and late fee traps and to increase scrutiny of the industry. A week later, the House passed the Credit Card Holders Bill of Rights by a margin of 287 votes, and later on in the show we'll discuss actually what has happened since then. The legislation would force companies to give advance notice of interest rate hikes, ban most retroactive rate increases, and stop companies from issuing cards to people under 18 years old. And if that fails to become law, in 2010, new Federal Reserve Board rules will bar issuers from changing interest rates on existing balances in most cases. In other words, once you get a credit card, it will be much harder for the company to suddenly start charging you more. The industry has responded by warning that interest rates will rise for everyone. Already, some issuers, including American Express, Bank of America, and Citigroup, have started rejecting more card applications. You're almost sure to get fewer offers in the mail, and the days of interest-free cards for 6 months, followed by soaring interest rates, are probably gone. Despite their purported woes, it's hard to feel sorry for the card companies. A survey conducted last year by Consumer Action, an advocacy group, revealed that the average penalty interest rate for cardholders who had missed a payment was 26.87%. And for years, companies have also denied consumers the right to go to court by requiring arbitration, have aggressively marketed to college students, and have adopted policies like universal default, which allows them to hike your interest rate if you miss a payment on a card issued by a completely different company. Some of their innovations, like cashback rewards for unpaid balances, were designed to get cardholders to stop paying the full amount they owe. Meanwhile, as they prepare for an uncertain future, the card companies are scurrying to find the next breakthroughs in credit card psychology. Take, for instance, Capital One's Card Lab, a festive internet site that lets customers design their own cards. You can order one with your son's photo on it or your daughter's. The site is interactive. If you indicate you don't want to pay an annual fee, for instance, the website tells you you must pay a higher interest rate. If you want to pay a low rate, the site tells you you can't get any rewards points. In essence, the website offers a series of choices that determine the relative values you place on different options. Capital One can watch as you investigate the site, learning more and more about you. The industry doesn't have to drop rats in a maze anymore. We've started going there on our own. Card Lab is at some level an enormous real-time ongoing experiment, says Jack Forstel, Senior Vice President of Marketing and Analytics at Capital One. By observing people's choices and then tracking how they use their cards, the company has learned who is more willing to pay annual fees and who wants airline miles badly enough to pay higher interest rates. We've learned interesting things, like people are more loyal to cards that have their kids' photos on them, Forstel says. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And we're talking about credit card psychology. So summing up, what the credit card companies realize and what legislation most likely won't change is that no matter how much we say we dislike credit cards, they've become an essential part of our lives. It's really hard to rent a car without a card, or shop online, or buy plane tickets. Often executives say, we are just looking for an excuse to use our cards, and so companies are becoming experts in figuring out which excuses we each most want to hear. They've let us transform our cards into an expression of love for our children. They'll let you tell yourself that charging a meal gets you a closer free flight to Tahiti. In closing up his article, before the Ryder left the Bank of America training session in Delaware, which we discussed last week, the instructor gave the class a little pep talk. You're going to have some days when you help customers, and you're going to walk out and feel really, really good, she told them. It's okay to help people know that we are all working to make the world a better place. It's okay to help them believe. Then she turned to the young man who had previously inquired about bringing up the indelicate topic of money with someone who had just lost her job, her house, or her husband. The instructor said, "We are the ones who let them know that there's always a brighter tomorrow. That's how we get paid back." So that was all from an article called "What Does Your Credit Card Company Know About You?" by Charles Duhigg, a business expert reporter from the New York Times. Now, since that article, the Senate has passed the law regarding credit card rules, and there is another article regarding this, and people have already experienced some of the loopholes. The name of the article is "Exploiting the Credit Card Loophole." Credit card issuers may hike charges and interest rates before the new regulations take effect, and borrowers who pay in full will be targeted. And this is a CBS Interactive article. The Senate passed a major reform of the credit card industry this past Tuesday that clamps down on arbitrary fee and interest rate increases. But even after President Barack Obama signs the bill, the law won't take effect for 9 more months. And that's a 9-month loophole. And a CBS News business correspondent, Anthony Mason, reports that consumer groups are concerned the credit card companies will use the time to hike up interest rates and fees while they can. And for those of you who personally have credit cards, you will note that this has happened already, where the credit card interest rates are being jacked up in the next 6, 8, 9 months for almost everybody. Continuing with the article, at a credit counseling center in Dallas, calls for help are up 40% over a year ago. Many come from borrowers buried in credit card debt. And according to Todd Mark of the Consumer Credit Counseling Service of Greater Dallas, he said, "It's really amazing how much of the debt is actually fees and interest instead of principal." Comedians may joke about the banks. Stephen Colbert said this week that the card companies simply change their rules and interest rates based on what the credit rule monkey spins on his rule randomizing wheel. But they're not laughing on Capitol Hill anymore. "They will go kicking and screaming into the night on this one," said Adam Levine of Credit.com. Levine warns that lenders will use the 9 months before the law is enacted to raise interest rates and hike fees. And this is no surprise. "During that time," he said, "we could face the continuing reign of terror." Interest and fees are lenders' primary source of profits. And I'm going to repeat that. The interest and fees are lenders' primary source of profits. So to make up for lost revenue, credit card companies may now have to go after the 45% of borrowers who pay their bills on time. Among some of the possibilities, reviving annual fees, charging interest immediately on purchases instead of offering grace periods, eliminating rewards programs, while at the same time the lenders are making it tougher to borrow. Nearly 60% of banks say they've tightened credit card lending standards this year. That means less money for borrowers squeezed by the recession. And we still face the fact that Americans are debt-ridden and that Americans have to focus on developing a serious plan personally to reduce their debt. Because this is not going to solve that problem, Levine said. Americans still owe $945 billion in revolving debt, most of it on credit cards, but that's down from $980 billion 6 months ago, although much of that is related to negotiations and bankruptcies. However, tighter lending standards may be one reason in that computation also. And of course, Americans finally may be starting to pay down their credit card bills to the extent that they can. So in short, what we're seeing here is this window of, as the writer called, terror, where the credit card companies are going to try to skim off as much money from the debtors as is legally possible over the next 9 to 12 months. And with that being said, let's focus on one particular point that was made in the article, and that is to have a program, a personal financial program, which allows you to deal with the reality of your income and the need to apportion that income reasonably in proper shares to your basic necessities, to the things that you want, and to the savings, which includes at the initial stage, savings means paying off your unsecured debt in particular. And that is what this course on life and debt has been discussing over the last year, how to deal with that. And again, I highly recommend the book by Professor Elizabeth Warren, All Your Worth, because it goes in very great detail into how to do this for almost all ordinary people. And as is always, I have to give a credit to the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs because they are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and from her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's real champions for debtors. And the other thing you can do is go back to the archives at www.kruufm.com in the life and debt area and listen again to the programs which in an ascending manner give you this knowledge. So either do that or actually go and get the book All Your Worth. I think that it is a small price to pay for great savings, or go to the library and get it too, because I know it's been in local libraries. And just a short recap on the contents of the book and on these programs, we went over really the truth about money in the past and then the six steps to a lifetime of having some riches by, first of all, counting all your worth, so really looking at what you have, your income and whatnot, and having to deal with that in a proper way by a proper formula. And then escaping from the thinking traps which prevent you from healing yourself financially. The third thing is counting the dollars and not the pennies, and getting lost in the small kinds of issues and not dealing with the larger issues. The next step was really enjoying life, that you have to be able to have some wants and some fun. And if you don't, then you aren't really living a life that you will ever truly afford. But that, again, is based on having a formula in place and sticking to it. The next step would be then, of course, to build your future by paying off your debt. And that's a very critical component in making all of your financial life viable. And then we discuss building your dreams a little at a time and not jumping into these programs of trying to become a millionaire overnight, but to put down the basics, build the program, and do it in small steps of progress and not taking huge gambling risks with your finances to make things better, which usually does not happen for most people. And then after that, we discussed relationships and money, or love and money, and how important one has to deal with the relationship side as the basis to a healthy life, rather than just using money as a focus all the time and destroying a relationship, which leads us ultimately to having it all in life. And then most recently, we discussed the biggest buy of your life for most people, which is purchasing a home that is right for you. We went over all the rules and principles that relate to buying that home and what to do and what not to do. So once again, you can either read the book, All Your Worth, or you can go back to the archives and listen to all those topics in a very complete way. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, coming back to Professor Warren and her daughter's book, we're really at the pinnacle of the educational process with this, because we've discussed everything to make it healthy, but there is the concept of it's not healthy. As a bankruptcy lawyer, I know that. In our economy, I see that. For many people, we're struggling and having huge financial difficulties that it's not easy to bootstrap oneself out of, even with the great program. But you should certainly go back and start building, thinking about the basics that have been discussed and what you need to use to make your life healthier in the future. But you could also be in the posture of needing financial CPR and protecting yourself when the things are really, really tough. So you've laid your plan of having a lifetime of stability and financial riches. And if you've done this program, you would be on track. And of course, you've worked very hard, if you follow these principles, to bring your money into some balance. And you've created a plan to make your money last for your life. You've started building a security fund and are moving toward a future that will really be richer and more secure. And that's not only in a financial way, but in a psychological way. But as we all know, in our lives, we have sometimes black holes that come up, and we know that sometimes things just don't go according to the plans that we have made and the edifices that we have constructed. Sometimes you're doing your best to put everything together, and yet the pieces just don't seem to fit in the puzzle of our lives. Out of left field, in today's current economy, it's possible to get laid off, and it really takes time to find another job. Or maybe there is a divorce in our situation, and you get the short end of the stick, the bills, and the cranky cat. Or perhaps a partner, a business partner, takes off and you lose your shirt, or perhaps you're in an accident. There's all kinds of hidden, unfortunate possibilities that come up in people's lives. Remember, there are times when bad things, and sometimes really bad things, happen to good people or really good people. Times when it seems like you just can't catch a break. As Professor Warren says, most books just end with, here's the plan, and you're supposed to ride off into the sunset. But that's not the reality that most people will experience in their lives. And it is good to know some financial CPR. Just like real CPR, we hope that you never have to use your financial CPR training. But we want you to have the knowledge just in case. You need to know somewhere in the back of your mind that if things ever really go wrong, you are ready to handle whatever life throws your way. You have a plan for good times, which we've been going over for the longest time now, and a plan for bad times, which really is altogether a plan for life. And just like physiological CPR, the instructor in that situation will tell you that the most important step in saving someone is to prepare for an emergency before one arises. So what does that mean? It means that you have to recognize the danger signs, learn the steps, and run through some practice drills. You have to habituate yourself into dealing with the downside. There is not a whole lot of time to get out the instructional manual when a person is turning blue. So it's a good idea to give some thought now when everyone is breathing just fine. And it's my hope that that's true for you, that you are at least on a stable footing right now financially. Financial CPR is about creating a strategy for what you will do if something goes wrong. And it really boils down to one kind of question. What will you do in a financial emergency? There are really four steps to create your own emergency backup plan. And I'll just note these first, and then we'll go into them in detail. The steps are, first, obviously, you got to spot the dangers. Step number two, and you need to know our program to understand this. Make a list of wants you would cut. Step number three, it's a little more serious. Make a list of the bare necessities you would cut, or the must-haves, as Professor Warren calls them, that you would cut. And then the last one is practice every year, and also practice before any major purchase. So those are the four steps. Spot the dangers, make a list of the wants you would cut, make a list of the bare necessities you would cut in a priority order, and practice every year, practice before any major purchase. So now let's go into the details of these points as much as we can do this week. Number one is spot the dangers. And in this area, you know what we're talking about. There are really scary places where you know you're going to be vulnerable. You know they're there, but it's more comfortable, frankly, for most people to avoid it, to look away, to look in the other direction. You may be worrying about your health, or you may be worrying about your job, looking at your whole situation. And in some ways, intuition is just an extension of the facts that we see around us without being neurotic about it. We need to be honest, realistic, and have our feet on the ground. And we have to have an escape plan. But to understand that and to react to it, we want that you do something that may feel a little unnatural and a little frightening, unfortunately. In other words, you have to look at those worries straight in the face. That is, you have to face the possibility, which may be a negative possibility. And with that, you're going to focus on what you can do to make things better and ultimately to worry a little, if not a lot, less. A very simple example and a growing example in people's lives is just suppose that your job would disappear. You get severed, you get laid off, you get fired, whatever the case may be. Now, this is just a fact of life in this economy, and it's getting worse for most people, but there are things you can do now to prepare yourself for that kind of crisis. First thing is you can dust off your resume and send it out to a few places just in case. You can start doing online job hunting, and you will have options available to you if something were to come up. Or maybe there is a realistic concern about health of you or someone in your family. And so it's a good time to prepare for that and perhaps rework your financial income to get long-term care insurance. Could be a need. So what you do is you spot the vulnerabilities and you think about them now when you have plenty of time to take steps to protect yourself. The general rule is that if you see or even intuitively feel some real dangers lurking in the future, and as I said, intuition is just a continuation of the facts, you need to do something now about it. Do not make it worse. Maybe you cannot find a better job right now, but you also know that this isn't a good time to take on a brand new car loan. If that health insurance is needed, then it's not the time for you to move. We always want things to be perfect, but the reality is that life isn't always smooth. In fact, we are here to accept the way life treats us in many ways, and that makes us, in some respects, a bigger person, but it also allows us to meet those challenges with intelligence, with goodness, and with savvy to help our own growth, progress, and evolution. So when we perceive a lurking problem, it's time to review the possibilities so you can protect yourself just in case. One way to do this is an exercise, but you jot down your ideas on a sheet of paper and you include the possible vulnerabilities and also what are your ideas for what you might do if those vulnerabilities do become real. Writing it down will, in fact, make it workable. So that's spot the dangers, and we will continue next week with the rest of the financial CPR. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life in Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous, debt manageable life.